This is the E of Real Estate. I'm René Stevens, your host, and my guest today is Adrian Inkloden-Weber. Adrian comes from a very practical background, having owned a busy real estate agency in Southwest Surrey for about 25 years. Walking into houses that had a distinct and in some cases a very dark atmosphere. This all led him to wondering why and what, if anything, could be done to change the feel of the property. These repeating patterns, and especially those of divorce houses, and we will come to that later on in the podcast, that he dealt with gave him the final nudge that he needed to leave the commercial world behind. And he started a quest researching how to connect to the natural energies of the universe. And for that, he explored the esoteric world, working with healers, palm readers, mediums, traveling to India, Nepal, Tibet, to further his knowledge. And about 15 years ago, he founded his present company, Dowsing Spirits, who works in the healing sector with a successful track record. He has written and published three books. The first called Heal Your Home, The Key to Unlocking Your Home's Positive Energies in 2013. This book is described by many as the Bible of Geopathic Stress. So that's quite something that you get that title. And it has sold well worldwide. The big difference with most of the books is that it is a self-help book and it contains a detailed healing section. And this allows the reader to carry out much of the remedial work needed to the family and home themselves. The book is based on his experiences over the years working on hundreds of clients all over the world. The second book, entitled Spirit and Earth from 2018, was co-authored with a friend, Tim Walter, and it is written as a guide to help modern day families live a more holistic life in the 21st century. Describes how we as humans have lost our connection with the earth. And the last book is just about to be published and is a follow-up of to the first. And so far, what I understood, it has still a working title, Heal Your Home Number 2, The Next Level.
That's it.
It contains many new problems that can affect the family and their home, again, with a detailed healing section at the rear. Adrian is the former vice president of the British Society of Dowsers and past chair of both their Earth Energies and Dowsing for Health groups. And furthermore, he runs a number of dowsing courses from an introduction weekend to advanced earth healing. So that's quite a list, Adrian. And
it is.
yeah. In this podcast, I would like to explore the concept of health and well-being in a specific learning and work environment.
Yeah.
And for me, a learn-work environment consists of three parts. That is the physical, the digital, and the social part. I would like to discuss with you subtle unseen energies that can be detrimental for our health. And part of it is related to earth. And part is related to electrosmog. And a very big part, what I understood from your book, is related to human thoughts and emotions.
Indeed.
And to kick off, as I said in our introduction offline, that I'm a real estate consultant in the commercial real estate business myself. And so it is quite a stretch from a real estate agent towards a holistic building healer.
It is.
People will wonder, was it already dormant in you, that healer? Was the healing ability already dormant in you that you could make such a stretch?
You know, it's a difficult one, René, because my father was a very grounded man and didn't believe in anything. You know, as far as he was concerned, the real world was the real world, and there was nothing else apart from that. My mother was a very sensitive lady, and I think probably if you call it a generational gift, you know, how she felt about life was very much passed on to me. I was a sensitive kid, I suppose. You know, for many, many years, I used to look at a lot of people who had been brought up in a, if you like, a spiritual household. You know, their parents had been healers, or their parents, you know, would talk about life after death. Neither of mine really did. So I would say it was always there. However, it took quite a while to come out. But I think that's all to do with life experiences. You know, if I hadn't gone through certain changes throughout my life, I probably couldn't do what I'm doing today. So it was there, but sometimes it needs a bit of a nudge to come out.
Yeah. Indeed. Could you tell us something more? Because that was the thing that triggered me the most when I got introduced to your first book by somebody whom I was interviewing. Divorced House.
Yes.
With the divorced house?
It's a tragic story in many ways. That I think with a state agency, obviously, because when you're going to value somebody's house, whether it's residential or commercial, you're walking into a shop unit or a retail unit, you're picking up on really the general sort of feel of everybody that's been in there, you know, whether it's the builders who have put the thing together in the first place, whether it's family visiting, whether it's people living there and the arguments and just general emotion that's given off by family dynamics. And you must have found, you know, walking into people's buildings that you get that initial feeling when you walk in. It can be a very happy feeling, it can be a very relaxed feeling, but some other times you walk in and it's just, it doesn't quite make your skin crawl, but it perhaps makes the hairs stand up on the back of your hands, or you just get this general impression of almost like a fog in the house. And that's really how the divorce houses started. When you first go into somebody's house, you get a general impression, you know, whether there's perhaps one toothbrush in the toothbrush holder and, you know, obviously dad's gone or mum's gone or whoever's gone out of the house. And then gradually you start looking around the house, you get a feel for the house, you put the house on the market. Obviously, you get the explanation that dad's gone or the family has finally broken up. And in fact, the people they bought the house from were very similar. They'd also had a divorce. You put the house on the market, you get it sold, a happy couple move in there. And often with this one particular house, almost 3 years to the day, you'd get a phone call to say, can you come and value the house? And the first two times you think, well, obviously, you know, they've perhaps done well for themselves. They've made more money. They're moving up market or they want a smaller house. But you get there and suddenly find that, the divorce is happening. Put the house on the market. It sells. Not always readily either. You know, some people would come back and go, it's a great house, but we just don't like it. There's something about it that puts us off. And of course, there are other people who are not particularly sensitive who would be able to walk in and not be bothered. But of course, once it was then sold again, it might take 1 month, 2 months, 3 months, or the statutory 3 years before suddenly the the family would break. The house would come to market and it would sell once again as a divorce house. And there was one particular house that we had on the market every 3 years, almost to the day, over the 25, 26 year period that I was running the business. And I got to know the people. In fact, I knew the neighbors next door because we lived in the same village a number of years later. And I got to know the guy next door very well. And it was only about probably 6-9 months since we'd sold the house, the divorce house. And I said to him, the guy, one day, look, how well do you know the new next door neighbors? He said, yeah, they come out for barbecues and, you know, we get to know them quite well. They've got kids of a similar age. So I said to him, can you get him round for a bite to eat one evening, he and his wife? And he said, yeah, of course we can. You're not going to do that funny stuff, are you? You're not going to talk about that funny stuff. And I said, well, if the conversation gets round to it, then maybe we will. And of course, And you know, the guy knew that I'd left the business, sold the business. And so he said, "What are you doing?" And I could see this friend of mine, his eyes kind of rolled in his head and said, oh, here we go. So I explained. And he said, "That's really interesting." He said, How do you find our house? And I said, "Well, it's not got a very good history behind it." So of course his first comment was, "Well, why did you sell the house to us then? You know, could you not have warned us?" And I said, "Well, it wasn't really that way. I wasn't really that way inclined. However, do you mind if I do some work?" And the guy said, "Yeah, okay, fine. I don't really understand it. I don't believe it, but let's give it a go." And that was 16 years ago. Almost one of my first ever clients, and they've been there ever since. So that was cured, or we moved them along pretty quickly, so they were happy. But of course, we've had alcoholic houses, schizophrenic houses. You know, it's an all-pervading atmosphere when it gets down to that level, Rene, and, you know, people can't help but be affected by it. And it's very sad, you know, it's so awful, you know, that so much of what I find in people's houses is that inherited human emotion that, whether it's good, bad, or indifferent, you know, it will affect people in different ways.
So somehow these energies keep on hanging, or say it in a different, more technical way, are recorded, and stored, and triggered that they play back. Can you say something about that?
Yeah, to me, it's all to do with vibrational energy, because we're all vibrating at different levels, and I think that with the building, it can almost pervade the walls, it can pervade the carpets, all the furniture. And of course, one person's vibrational energy is fine for them, but not necessarily good for anybody else coming into the house. So it's not just the way the family live, the dynamics of the family, it's all the family, all the people that come to see them, the workmen and workwomen that would come into the house to perhaps do painting, decorating, maybe a bit of rewiring. So everybody that enters their house will leave a certain essence behind them. And it really then depends on how detrimental that vibrational energy is as to how quickly it will affect the family. So much of what I do when I've done work on a family's home is give them the tools to be able to keep the house clear themselves. So we do the industrial cleaning, if you like, and then we give them the duster to be able to do the problems afterwards. But it's all down really to me to the vibrational energy that's just left behind from others.
That brings me to something. I think it was also on your website about the Japanese professor Emoto.
Yes.
Who did a lot of research with water crystals. So for people who don't know it, that there were words of love and words of hatred.
Yes.
And then he froze the water molecules and put them under a microscope, and the pictures of the love water was very, very harmonious, and the hatred was very disharmonious. So maybe I'm taking it to a very big stretch now. We humans, we consist of 70% water.
Yes.
So when it affects water in a glass or in a bottle, why not in our human body? What's your take on this?
Yeah, I would agree 100% on that. You know, there's a lot of scientific work now done. Emoto, sadly, like anything, when somebody comes up with something slightly different, there's always people out there that will say, "Oh, it's an absolute lot of rubbish." But he proved it time and time again. They even did several experiments. I think he was sitting with several hundred people, I think, in Japan, and they were sending their intent to a glass of water or a jug of water over in San Francisco or Los Angeles. And by sending that love, they changed the molecular structure of the water. But I think then somebody came back and said, no, the scientific experiment was wrong. It needs to be done again. It did it again, and it worked again. But of course, there's always going to be people out there saying, "Oh, there's somebody put something in the water." So we have to take a lot of it. We have to be very careful. But of course, you know, there's documented history over many, many years about how the moon affects us. It affects the tides on the planet, so why shouldn't it affect the tides in our body?
Exactly.
And I tend to find that when I'm looking at people's houses, I tend to look at things I call water veins that run under their houses, and rivulets of water that actually pick up on not just earth energy problems, but also other people's human emotions. So there's a lot to do with water. We always bless our water before we drink it.
Mm.
Even if it just asks for the detrimental energy patterns inside it, any chemicals inside it to be taken away, to be left in peace, balance and harmony as we drink it. And you can do the same with wine as well. It does make wine taste better too.
So in a sense, thinking about your response, that you could state, maybe not scientifically, but that water is a kind of medium, just like your USB stick or your hard drive. It records information.
Yep.
And probably because, as you said, some people are more sensible for it than others, it's probably a matter of resonance. When you resonance with that frequency, it does something with you.
Absolutely.
Is that the correct interpretation?
Yeah, I would say exactly that. And I know there was, I'm not scientifically minded, but I know a friend of mine that is, and was saying that he was reading, I think it was something like The New Scientist, when they would begin to experiment with water to actually be able to hold a program, a computer program. And they were experimenting with plants and actually almost being able to implant that program into a vine or fern, and actually then be able to bring the information out later on. So there's some amazing leaps and bounds going on, you know, whether you call it the quantum world or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly water, I think, but it holds the key to all life anyway, doesn't it? You know, we can go several weeks or months without food, but not that many hours without water.
Exactly.
So it is the fabric of us. It's our blueprint, really, isn't it?
Yeah. Okay, so in a way, you could say that there are several stressors around us as humans, like geopathic stress is one of them. We can go into that deeper. But you could also say architectural pathic or archipathic stress, the building materials, the shapes, the forms, the Indeed. Colors, because they all so have frequencies, thus energy.
Yeah.
Techno stress, one of the big things nowadays with our technical world, the electrosmog.
Yes.
And as we said already, that huge part is about human thoughts and emotions. So you could call that sociopathic stress. And maybe also even spirit-pathic stress, as I
Indeed.
Read in your book and on your website. So in fact, there are 5 main areas, you could say, that causes stress on us humans, and or maybe on every biological life form, and also plants and animals. You quoted in, I think, a book or on your website, I read that the house healing is very much people healing.
Yes.
So of these stressors that I mentioned, the social part is the most important part, isn't it?
It is. And of course, even with that, there are going to be subsections within that sociopathic stress or technopathic stress or anything. So of course, you've got a lot of earth energies thrown in there. You've got water, you've got spirits.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it's all down to me, vibrational energy. It's getting the energy sort of harmonized, if you like, that actually works with us rather than against. Of course, with any building, you know, you can walk in. I know we've got all sorts of buildings that have been done a bit like Solomon's Temple, you know, that they're built in such a beautiful way that it's actually beautiful for the eye to look at, but other buildings you look at and go, it just doesn't work. And the same with houses too. You know, there was a guy called Lutyens who built a lot of houses in England, and I think the late 1800s, that sort of time. but he built the houses in a way that he felt people should live. Not how other people felt they should live, but how he felt. And having sold a number of them, quite historic houses and sort of grade two star listed, you walk in there and they're just not suitable for modern day families. You probably find the fireplace is actually bigger than the main living room. You know, it was ridiculously done. And of course, the same happens with any energy patterns. And if you can get them right, you've got a perfect house to live in. But of course, you've got to balance it with the family, you know, because, you know, all my work is done with the whole family in mind. But if anybody else came to live in the house and the family moved out, and I would always will say to them, look, as you move out, we'll just do a general clearing on the house so that it's ready for a new family to move into, because they don't want to inherit your energy patterns. Even though they're perfect for you and being balanced for you, they're not going to be right for other people. And that's the same with any building, you know, whether it's university, whether it's, you know, where they live, where they learn, there's always going to be sort of that problem there, that whoever sat in that seat before you will be leaving a certain energy pattern behind. If you're sensitive and sit in the same seat, you can actually pick up on what that person was feeling.
Yeah, again, about resonance. So if it even works on that level, when you are in a big building with a big mass, the Earth planet herself.
Absolutely, yep.
Yeah, that will have a huge impact on people's energy system.
Indeed.
In your book, I saw, by the way, it's very, very practical. Compliments.
Thank you.
I noticed that you had in section 2, 37 aspects that can disturb harmony,
yes,
energy-wise.
Yep.
And in part 3, there are also 37 possibilities to address how to fix that.
Yep.
I picked out 5 items.
Okay.
Maybe we can go them one by one.
Of course.
So that people get, the listeners get the feeling what it's all about. And when they're interested, they can find your book on Amazon. Anyway, I will put also the ISBN, the number, and your website later on at the end of the interview.
Yeah. The reason I wrote the new book is because the questions have now gone up to 55. So it's kind of partly my learning over the time, and it's partly one or two other things I wanted to put in there that.
Okay.
Yeah. My editor advised me not to put in the first book.
Okay. Wow, that's quite an increase, eh? 37 to 55.
Yep.
What I picked out is detrimental human emotions. Eh? As we said earlier, the human factor, the sociopathic stress is one of the biggest, because you can say, yeah, it comes from the building material, but yeah, the source was the human stress that went into that material.
Absolutely. And of course, with any house, and you've got to look at it almost brick by brick. It's fine clearing the family's problem, the family's influence out the way. But of course, you've got things like electricians, plasterers. You know, any brand new house will also have that social stress to it.
Okay.
So you've got this. I think this is kind of where the practicality of being an estate agent, or coming from that background rather than a typical healing background, is that. You know, we all know that when you put something on the market, sometimes it sells very quickly and it just sails through beautifully. And other times there's always problems that need to be overcome. And I'm sure you find that with what you do in the Netherlands.
Yeah.
And I look at really healing very much the same way, that if there's a problem, there's always going to be a way of overcoming it, but it may not be very, very apparent at the time. So you've got to almost go back to the nuts and bolts of the matter and look at how far back you've got to go to actually do the healing work on what the problem is today. So it's a bit like a detective novel at times, you know, you never know what you're going to find when you start.
Yeah. So when you zoom into the detrimental human emotions, what could you share with our listeners?
Yeah, obviously you've got to look at generally the family itself, and you can often pick up very quickly how the dynamics work within the family, whether they're a happy family, whether there are problems there, whether there's any form of stress there. You know, certainly with these days, with the way the virus is working, with COVID, there's an awful lot of stress that's now within houses causing people a lot of anxiety. And that in itself is quite a big stress point for many people. Really, anybody that's actually lived in that house or been in that house will leave a certain amount of emotional impact behind. Now, then it really then depends with the people as to really how sensitive they are. You get, it seems to be a third of the people in the world are virtually bulletproof. Nothing bothers them in any way, shape or form. Another third of the people will get mild symptoms in the house or, you know, the or the building. The other third would be hit big time as soon as they walked in, and they would probably be the people that would come back and say, we're not going to buy the house because we don't like it. So there's a whole gambit of emotion that comes in, you know, from joy to absolute massive upset, divorce, death, whatever. All of that will sink into the fabric of the house and, of course, then start to cause problems for the family and anybody else moving in there. So it's an exciting thing to find. I do tell a few people off. I shouldn't really say that, should I? Some people do come back and saying, you know, how can we find 68 human emotional areas that have caused us problems? And I said, well, you know, but you've obviously been a naughty family. You better start sorting yourselves out. So I think it's down to, if you ever have an argument, of course, nobody ever wins an argument. Even if you've actually got the moral high ground and you think you've won, there's always going to be somebody simmering afterwards to say, yeah, you might have won, but I don't really accept what you've said. So the big thing I say to people is, look, you've got to be able to either forgive that person or just go up and give them a big hug. By giving somebody a big hug or saying, I'm sorry, it's amazing how very quickly the house will start to clear itself. But of course, if you don't, it's just that it just builds up and up and up, and it can almost start influencing you. And that's the big problem, really, is that you move in as a happy family and gradually this all-pervading air starts to almost change your character. And okay, it's not going to turn a placid person into an axe murderer or, you know, anything like that. It's not that extreme, but it's going to be there constantly, day in, day out. And of course, as you relax at night as well, and your body goes to sleep, you can also be attacked by this extra strong emotion that comes through.
Okay. Attachments, the next one.
Attachments, yep. Now, a lot of people in the past would call them entities, but I've never liked the word entities. It always kind of conjures up all the Hollywood nasties. And Hollywood is great at, you know, at horror films and, you know, promoting fear in people while you watch them. I never could, even as a child, you know, horror films would scare me to death and, you know, I couldn't sleep for a couple of nights. So when I look at attachments, it's very much, if you like, blobs of human emotional energy. So let's say you and I meet and we had an argument, which is very unlikely, but energy is given off. And of course, that energy can be very detrimental to not just ourselves, but to other people. And I look at them a little bit like a jigsaw puzzle, that you and I create three or four with an argument. They can fly out of the door and perhaps down and move into next door or into the local pub or restaurant. And the different atmosphere there can actually make them stronger and stronger. So whatever you and I have brought into being can actually attach to somebody else. And if they start attaching within their auric field, within that electromagnetic field surrounding the body, they will start to influence people. And generally, most people have an attachment of some sort. Most people will have three or four. Some people have maybe 8, 9, 10, 12, 15, 20. It depends on how sensitive they are, what sort of job they do, and how they are as a person. So they can influence children greatly. A lot of children who have nightmares, for instance, or don't like going to bed or don't sleep well, often will have attachments, which will kind of, it's a bit like a chatter going on in the background. So if you can get them moved, it's almost like this, I never like to use the word miracle, but it's almost like a miracle cure. It's almost as though overnight they change. I don't forget with a lot of this, it's often the mum who will give me a call or drop me an email to begin with to say, look, I've got problems with my two sons. They're not sleeping well. They argue all the time. They're just very, very different people to how they were, say, 2 months or 3 months ago. Can you do anything about it? So the children don't know I'm working on them. The husband doesn't know that I'm working on them, because the way I do my healing work is very much asking the powers that be to help me rather than me force it onto anybody. So we'll always use the word as appropriate. So whatever's appropriate healing to be done, it will be done in conjunction with the powers that be. So of course it's marvelous. It's always incredibly humbling when mum phones me back in a couple of days' time to say, I don't know what you've done, but I've got my two lovely boys back. They're very grounded. They're loving towards each other. Well, most of the time, as boys are, you know, they're always going to have their sort of their subtle ways to sort of wind each other up, especially brothers. But it's clearing away all that sort of baggage, that sort of very heavy weight that some people carry around with them. Stress. If you stress a lot or worry a lot, it reduces the, if you like, your ability to be able to keep yourself strong and keep yourself clean. So the more attached, the more you're influenced by these little outside nasties that need to be cleared away.
Okay. We go one step further. Spirits in the house.
Now then. If somebody said to me, say, 20 years ago that I'd be talking with ghosts, moving ghosts on and gradually working with them, I would have laughed at them. You know, I was, as a child, scared of anything that might go bump in the night. I had to sleep with a landing light on. I would never walk down a garden in the dark. I certainly wouldn't visit any churchyards either in the dark. You know, I was quite scared by this stuff. It made me physically I wouldn't put myself into that stress situation. But the more you start working with them, it's kind of become straightforward. It just becomes a natural way of life to me. Now, if anybody said that, no, let's go back. Geopathic stress, generally, the word geopathic means sickness produced by Mother Earth. But I feel that if you, as you work on people's houses and as you work on them as a family, you've got to go beyond just pure earth energies. You've got to look at what's out there spirit-wise. And most houses have spirits in them, but most people tend to be fairly unaware of them. And in fact, most spirits tend to be quite unaware of the families living in the house as well. They can be walking past your front door, like the energy patterns of the family, and come in, and you've got yourself two unpaid house guests or unwanted house guests. So it's a matter of tuning in to find out who they are, what they are. You can find out how long they've been in the house, but by a series of questions, either with messages coming through or using a pendulum or dowsing rod, you can actually build up a picture of who they are, what they are, what they passed away from, and why they haven't gone to the light or gone into heaven. Sometimes it can be people held back by family grief. So if mum's died or dad's died or one of the children have died, the family obviously are very, very upset by it, and it's their grief that holds them back. Some people feel very guilty. They've done something they feel is very naughty in this world and don't want to have any retribution when they finally get up to the pearly gates. Some people don't know they're dead. Obviously, during the courses of the First and Second World War, a lot of people died, you know, and didn't, you know, they died so quickly they didn't realize that they died. Can be wandering the planet still, wondering what on earth is going on. So there are many, many different reasons. A mother perhaps dying in childbirth in a hospital will stay behind to look after the child. Now, that child may have now lived and passed over, but poor old mum is still wandering around trying to find her, trying to find out where she's gone. So there are many, many, many different scenarios as to why, A, people haven't gone to the light, and B, why they're in people's houses. But it's fascinating, you know, it's something that I do a lot of, even if it's just not working on people's houses. I went over to Ypres a few years ago into the various battlefields over there. And I spent most of my time sitting down in graveyards with my back to the gravestone, moving soldiers on who hadn't gone to the light. So it's a very humbling thing to be able to do for people. And once you start on that journey, they're always calling upstairs, it's always calling on you to do further work.
Yeah. Yeah, indeed. I was just pondering that although more and more people are more open-minded about these things, when you, even the mainstream media, there's a lot of movies, documentaries, interviews about the paranormal.
Yep.
But still, there are some hardcore skeptics who say, ah, we cannot measure that. So it can't be true. But on the other hand, when you look with the same scientific insights that our five senses are only perceiving a very, very small portion of what the scientists think there is out there.
Yes.
Yeah, well, maybe we just don't have yet the right instruments that works conform a scientific method, because dowsing, yeah, for people who douse and who are experiencing that, for them it's clear. And it's not something new age, it's already thousands of years old.
Absolutely.
Just a sidestep for people saying, oh, come on, what is that Renee Steve is now interviewing?
It's always very difficult, just really covering dowsing, because science always loves repeatability, doesn't it? And of course, it's always very difficult that it's great if you're doing the dowsing work in the field and you can go and find all sorts of things. You can go and find old trenches. You can go and dig up any war artifacts. You can even look at a lot of the lost buildings over here in the UK. And of course, they're now looking at Stonehenge, thinking that Stonehenge originally was built in Wales and it's now moved across to Wiltshire. I don't think it all has. I think we owned a few of the stones over here in England, but I think obviously the blue stones came from Pasili. But of course, with dowsing, that, you know, a lot of people who douse, very sensitive people, and just get on with it without really thinking too much about what they're asking. They just ask if there's a water vein here to find, the rods will show you. But of course, if you then put into a laboratory situation, A, your heart rate's going to increase, and B, you're going to be so desperate to try and prove that you can get repeatability that repeatability almost goes completely out the window. And of course, don't forget, if we're looking, let's say, for an underground stream, what you would look at as an underground stream is very much different to what I would look for. So unless you're actually pinpointed exactly, say it's an underground stream, it's 5 foot down and it's 4 inches wide and it's running that way, and can you find it in the room? The chances are we both could. But you've got to get it so close to actually what it is for people to actually find the same thing.
Actually, you tipped already for the next topic. We are going more grounded, literally, Earth energy lines.
Yeah. Now, Earth energy lines, now I've split them now into about five separate questions, really, when I'm doing my work. But you've got Earth energy lines, which to me are really the power bands of the planet. They're there to almost promote and actually keep life on the planet. If we didn't have them, the planet would not be a living thing anymore. And I do look at planet very much as a living, breathing thing rather than just the third rock from the sun, you know. There's so much goes on that, you know, we still can't fathom out. You know, we call it Mother Nature, whatever. So you've got Earth energy lines, which run to me very much on the surface of the planet. You tend to find them running through most people's homes, but they're not always detrimental. We've got the new lines, which I've put in the book, is called dynamic energy lines, which tend to, again, run on the surface, but you'll find them running a lot deeper as well, often several hundred feet deep into the planet. They tend to have power bands with them, so maybe 3, 5, or 7 bands, each running in different directions. So of course, not only can you have the whole line being detrimental, but there may only be certain bands that might be problematic for the house. So you're picking out which bands to work on. We've got fault lines. Fault lines are very much of an integral part of most sacred sites. there is always a fault line running through a sacred site, not necessarily through the building itself. Let's say we take a burial mound, for instance, then it won't actually run through the burial mound because, of course, if it's a fault line, the burial mound is going to fall down. But it normally skirts within probably a few feet of the building so that there's a certain amount of earth energy running through and a certain amount of human emotion. And often that human emotion can be moved from one sacred site to another through these fault lines.
Mm-hmm.
We've got earth energy channels. There's the Michael and Mary line that was doused by Hamish Miller and Paul Broadhurst many years ago, running from Cornwall up to the South Norfolk coast, running through places like Avebury, Glastonbury, the Hurlers down in Cornwall, St. Michael's Mount, and these beautiful power bands that surround the Michael Lay, the midsummer solstice sunrise line. So you've got these beautiful energy channels bringing power into the lay and powering up all the sacred sites. Now, it's a bit like the chicken and egg situation, Rene. You know, we don't necessarily know whether the sacred site was there first and these lines then were attracted to the sacred site, or whether our ancestors could actually picture the lines crossing and put the sacred sites on there. So somewhere like Glastonbury, fascinating site to go around and douse for the Michael and Mary line, and Avebury in particular, because it's quite flat, you can douse it running through the stones. So we've got those lines that can actually affect people. And of course, you've got ley lines as well, you know, human intent lines, as I would call them, that obviously do bring a certain amount of human emotion and a certain amount of earth energies within the sacred sites.
Last but not least, illness trigger points.
Yeah, it's a fascinating one. That's one of my new questions into the new book. You know, we all suffer stress and strains throughout life. Some people are better than others to actually get rid of it and live a very peaceful life. Others, you know, have major, major problems. And it's those problems that are forgotten. So it could be, I don't know, when you're sort of very young, sort of young teenager, you go out with a girl, you think that's the love of your life and it's going to be that way for the rest of your life. And suddenly 3 weeks down the line, she says, I don't like you anymore. I've got to find somebody else. So there's a lot of stress and a lot of worry and a lot of heartache behind that, even if you're only sort of 13, 14 years old. And that can actually cause the body to, if you like, come out of homeostasis. It kind of affects the cells in the body. And that can actually cause the cells to perhaps start going rogue at that particular stage to actually then cause you problems many, many years later. So that's kind of a very gentle way of looking at it. But there are a lot of people who have had some very, very terrible things happen to them in their early life, whether it's physical abuse, mental abuse, whatever it may be, that it's kind of part of their makeup, but it's still there. It's still within their reptilian brain or the subconscious. Mm-hmm. And it's that subconscious that's never, ever going to be relaxed. And time again, I'm finding people who have those problems and it's still sometimes lying dormant. It hasn't come back to affect them yet, but the chances are a lot of the cancers in the world, a lot of the illnesses in the world can actually be put down to these trigger points.
Mm-hmm.
There's a tragic story that's written about in the new book, which is quite complex, about a lady having cancer now and how it came about, why she had it. But many of these, you know, can be put down just to really past tragic incidences.
Yes, I would say that you digest all the whole stress items in several points, but they are, of course, all interconnected. There's not separate. So what you are telling that made me think there can be a stressor long ago, say 30 years ago, but by, for instance, the electrosmog stress that is compromising our immune system,
yes,
there comes a crack in your system. And then that old thing can pop up again.
Yeah. And I think if you look at what's going on with 5G at the moment, obviously it's a fairly contentious subject, and so was 4G, and so was, you know, with the original. There's a book, I've forgotten who the guy is that wrote it, when the flu epidemic or the Spanish flu hit back in the early 1900s, it was said to have actually originated on one of the islands where the Americans had actually just brought electricity to all the buildings. And it seemed to be that actually put everybody's immune system, affected everybody's immune system in a very detrimental way, and that they feel that's where the flu came from. And it's interesting to find out that, like, Wuhan now is that they were one of the first towns to go full 5G. And that's a potential epicenter for the epidemic we've got at the moment. So I think the body is very influenced, in a detrimental way, by electrosmog.
Yeah.
And certainly if you look at, you know, well, obviously we'll talk about universities and things. There was a case a number of years ago, I won't mention the town, but there was a junior school at the top of the hill in this town, and they had a telephone mast put on top of the junior school. Hadn't told the parents. Of course, the parents went absolutely berserk and demanded it be taken down. So it got taken out away from the roof and actually was put in the grounds, which actually was worse, because when it was on the roof, it was obviously all the beams were being spread out above the school. And of course, as soon as it was put in the grounds, it was then running through the school and causing kids all sorts of problems. Certainly a lot of illnesses were happening within days of it being changed. A lot of them were being very ill, vomiting at school, nausea at school. Again, the parents got up in arms, and I think certain that it was a very wealthy area of this town, and they actually got it moved completely. So it just shows you, doesn't it? You see these mobile towers on top of all the university buildings. Actually, the people in beneath are probably actually a lot safer than everybody in the surrounding areas.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, one of my ideas is that a building can become an energy generator, not only in the literal sense that you can create your own energy by windmills or water down from the earth, warmth from the earth, but also it can charge the users of the building in the sense that instead of depleting their vital life energy. So most of the things that I think it's a normal thing that we focus on how to get rid of something or how to repair something. So what is the cure? But I most like the Chinese. I would like more the approach how to prevent in the first place.
Absolutely. I agree. That would be really nice. But of course, it's very difficult holding back science, isn't it? It's very difficult holding back things like iPhones and, you know, all the thing. We just love technology. And of course, the more we love technology, the more complicated it gets. And of course, that starts generating its own problems as well.
So maybe also in a sense that you can see or prevent this, don't use the technology anymore. But another viewpoint could be that we as humans adapt.
Yeah.
Because you can increase your immune system by eating more healthy food, having more rest, or whatever you do. Maybe there is also a way to become more, protective against all this electrosmog because we change in a positive sense.
I agree. And I think that's very much how I think the human race does adapt.
Yeah.
But it's how long it takes to adapt, I think, is the difficulty, you know?
Yeah,
certainly. I'm about to say a game I play. No, it's not a game because it's all very serious, but it was quite fun because whatever comes into my house, if you like, gets blessed. Now, it's the power of intent, it's the power of prayer, whatever you want to call it, you know, without bringing too much religion into it. So even with my mobile telephone, when it comes in, I put it between my two hands and ask that it be cleared of any detrimental energy, and that whenever it goes off, whenever it's sitting still, it's actually beneficial to me. So I do that with everything. So I kind of, once I've done it, I kind of forget that I've done it. And I was teaching a Heliohome course down in Kent a number of years ago. And there were two ladies down there, and they'd been on a couple of my other courses before, and one had and the other one hadn't. So she was kind of showing off a wee bit, and I was kind of listening. Like a typical estate agent, you can hear about four conversations at once, you know. And I heard her chatting away, and she said, look at my telephone. If I walk up to it and ask where the detrimental energy, how far out the detrimental energy comes, so you watch my rods. And she walked up to it, and the rods crossed about 2 feet away from it. And she said, I'll do that with Adrian's as well. You watch what happens with Adrian's. And of course, she walked right up to it, and nothing happened. So the other lady came up and said, oh, let me have a go. How detrimental is Adrian's telephone? Nothing. And she said, what have you done to it? And I said, I've just blessed it. And I've just blessed yours as well. And what I said is, look, go back and just check yours again and see what that's like. And they walked over there. And in between times, as they walked over to do mine, I'd blessed her telephone.
Yeah.
Energy patterns not detrimental anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I hadn't told her. So it was a blind testing. So she walked up to say, right, look, just see how bad it is. Oh, it isn't anymore. So
So human
do to influence it.
Human intent, yeah.
Absolutely. And it's incredible what you can do with intent.
Yeah, I think that gives you also a positive attitude instead of fighting against something. Oh, I'm against war, I'm against 5G, I'm against this, I'm against that. But when you focus on the positive thing, blessing, love, just by doing that makes already the big difference.
Of course it does.
Yeah.
You know, Renny, in this day and age, you know, with the virus, there's so much uncertainty and people are feeling overwhelmed. You know, it's very difficult sometimes to keep that positive approach.
Mm.
But you can quite easily, even if you feel a bit down one day, by, you know, just sending intent to, you know, your aura that, you know, everything around you remains beneficial. It's amazing how much effect that will have on not just you, the house, but also the family.
Yeah, there's that famous experiment by that Indian guru, I forgot his name. They were meditating in a stadium with 7,000 people, something about, and the whole crime rate went down, not only in that town, but in the, I think the whole country or maybe the whole world. I forgot about it.
Absolutely. Well, it's quite documented. There was I think a group still going down in Brighton called the Fountain Group. Which my late friend Hamish Miller was part of. And it was formed back in, I guess, the 50s or the 60s, when all the Teddy Boys were about and causing problems down in Brighton. And they all got together and meditated. And actually, within a few months, apparently the Teddy Boys stopped coming down and Brighton returned to a normal, placid seaside town that it was. So there was a lot you can do. I mean, the power of people. If you get together with the same intent, it's pretty cool what you can do.
So hopefully this video interview helps in spreading the good news and the good vibes. I want to change to a next segment. What have been your biggest struggles or challenges with the above mentioned areas, and how have you overcome them?
Okay. Now, the first big struggle was trying to get rid of the business. You know, it was very difficult to combine the commercial world of a state agency. You know, we had six offices. We had about 35, 40 people working for us. And it's been very difficult to actually juggle that and to try and juggle what I'm doing now, you know, house healing. So one had to go, and it wasn't going to be the house healing. It was going to be what I was doing estate agency wise. And I think it was then really that I think everybody that I knew, almost to a person, looked at me as though I was crazy. You know, how can you give up a successful business to go and do healing work? Because that's rubbish anyway, isn't it? It doesn't work. And, you know, it's kind of new age. And what are you going to do? You know, wear sort of funny colored clothes and, you know, grow long hair. Well, I couldn't grow long hair because I hadn't got much left. But, you know, what are you going to do? You're going to become a hippie, are you? And I said, no, actually, it's really trying to show people that even an ex-estate agent can do this work. So if I can do it, there's hope for everybody else on the planet. And I'm going to dress normally, and I'm not going to do anything any different. And it was really trying to show people that, A, I was serious about what I was doing, and B, that by what I was doing, you could actually start to change people's lives. And then it's really trying to introduce it into mainstream life for as many people as I possibly can, which is why anything that I do has to look professional. The more professional it looks, whether it's the report, whether it's the drawn-up plan, whether it's the presentation of my book, whatever you do has to look professional, so that even if somebody who has got no idea what you're talking about picks up a report, they can look at the work that's gone into it and say, ah, okay, I can see the logic behind it. I may not be able to see the spiritual side behind it.
Yeah.
So it's really trying to say to people, look, you don't need to sit there and meditate for hours and hours and hours to do this work. It's by just having that good intent can start to change not just your life and your family's life, but the lives of thousands, if not millions, of other people. So it was hard, René, in many ways, but I think I was so determined to do what I wanted to go and do that it's amazing how really the powers that be open up so many pathways for you. And you can look back on it. It wasn't nudges. It was a kick up the backside, you know, every time. It was not saying a very gentle, go this way. It was kind of go that way. You know, you've got no choice. Mm-hmm. And here we are today. Mm-hmm. There's nobody more surprised about it than I am. You know, I still look back at it and go, how did it happen? But I'm glad that it did.
Yeah. Yeah, things come on your way. Yeah.
They do. And it's kind of like 0 to 60 in 10 seconds, isn't it? You know, there's no holding back. You know, you can't unlearn something that you've just learned.
Yes.
And I know the conversation you and I have had that, you know, what you've been doing over the last couple of years as well, you know, you visit some remarkable sites, and by just opening your mind, you know, you still need that skepticism, you know, we still need to be skeptical. And I always am until something's proved to me that it works. Mm-hmm. And once it's proved to me that it works, that's it. You're on to the next level and the next level and the next level.
Yeah.
So you need to be open-minded. You need to be skeptical as well. Get that balance as much as you can.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's the hardest thing, to find your balance and navigate through, the known and the unknown.
I'm still trying.
Yeah, indeed.
I don't think you perhaps ever get the balance. I think there's going to be a little bit one way or the other. I think that's
I think just like skating or skiing or riding a bicycle. Per definition, you are always finding a balance. Moving. There's not a standstill, because then you fall down.
Absolutely right. Yeah.
Okay. Next one. What are the main things you wish you had known earlier in those respects? Can you talk about the aha moment in the last 15 years?
Yeah. I think with all of it, it would have been amazing to be able to do this work when I had my business, you know. Because of the houses that I walked in and often didn't get a good feeling about them, because a lot of other people felt the same way. You know, sometimes these houses just wouldn't sell. And, you know, it wasn't even down to price. You know, you can get the price reduced to such an extent that it looks good value, but people still didn't want to buy it. So it would have been lovely to be able, I mean, from a commercial point of view, it would have been lovely to go and do that. And in fact, there are a couple of agencies, estate agencies, who kind of do believe but don't believe. They're kind of that happy skepticism about what I do. But if they have a house that isn't selling, they will often talk to a client and say, you better give Adrian a quick call and have a word with him.
Yeah.
So I guess there have been many, many aha moments along the way. But probably the first house that I started to work on that was, if you like, my first paid house. You know, because I never thought anybody would look at it. And I wanted to make sure. And he was the wife was very, very spiritual. He wasn't. He was a lovely old boy. But one day his wife was out. I went to go and call to see them, and she'd had to pop out, and sat down and made a cup of coffee. And he said, look, about this house healing lark, you know, what's supposed to happen? And I said, well, your study area that you really, really didn't like to spend time in should be warmer and brighter and lighter and much more inviting. Yeah, it is, actually. I like it now. It's great. That funny smell upstairs in your airing cupboard, that there was a trapped elemental up there, nature spirit, the smell's gone. So, oh, yeah, it has. And I said, the whole house must feel warmer and lighter and brighter and more inviting. He said, yeah, we're both spending more time in the house. And he said, oh, so it does work then, does it? And that was kind of partly aha to me to say, okay, you better explain a wee bit more to people about the potential that's there.
Yeah.
But what I didn't want to do is almost like or hypnotize them by saying, this is what's going to happen.
Yeah, yeah.
And by doing that, almost you've implanted that impression, and they're looking for it all the time. I just like to almost catch people by surprise to say, they wake up one morning and go, ah, it's beautiful. We actually enjoy spending time in our home rather than feel like it was somebody else's house.
Yeah, it's like when you have a wound, a scratch, and this healing, it's itching, and you're all the time aware that it is that you have a wound because it's itching.
Yeah,
when it is healed, you don't notice it anymore.
Absolutely.
Wait a minute. It's healed already. I think it's similar to what you are expressing with this man that, it was as it should be. So, why bother?
Yeah. And I think with a lot of it, I mean, the lovely aha moments come also now from the wife of the house. So if the wife's ever phoned me up or we've exchanged emails and doing the work, and she said, can you do this work without my husband knowing? And I said, yeah, of course we can, because the way we work with the powers that be, it's appropriate healing. She said, because if he knew what I was doing, I'd probably be committed. He'd think I was going mad. So I can't tell him. And of course, it's a wonderful time when he comes back from work and goes, something's changed in the house. I don't know what it is. The kids are probably asleep and they're happy. But he said, there's something changed in the house. And he said, have you redecorated? No. Is it new furniture? No. Carpets? No. Something's changed. And of course, when he goes to work the next day, I get the phone call from the wife saying he's noticed. I can't tell him.
Yeah.
She probably will tell him in a few months' time, but it's that lovely moment. And that's always the humbling bit, really. That's the bit, you know, you've actually got it right.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Future. What are your goals and aspirations for the next 5 years? And what impact do you want to have in the world, personally and professionally?
It's a big question, isn't it? Where do you start? I mean, I'd like to get the new book out. That should be waiting for the proof copy to come through, which should be through in the next few days. To get that online, to really get that out to people. So again, they can start helping themselves. And to me, it's so, so important that not just me doing this work, but others, you know, like you pick up the book, you can read through the book and go, I'll have a go at this. Mm-hmm. And okay, if somebody finds it hard, I get often phone calls or emails to say, I think I've done it, but can you check for me? Which I'm always happy to do so. Hopes and aspirations. I just hope, I'd love to see the book in every house in the world, you know, not for me to make money, but just for people to take on board what it's all about, to be able to look through. And even if it's just that one small change, they may start looking at, you know, treating themselves better, treating their family better, then the whole planet starts to change. I think it can very, very quickly once you get that critical mass. You know, we're only going to start moving forwards big time.
Yeah.
So I guess really for me is for people to actually recognize that they can help themselves. They don't necessarily need me, but I'm kind of a bit like the industrial cleaner. I go in there and do the real heavy stuff that a lot of people perhaps would feel a bit fearful about doing, move the ghosts and things on.
Yeah.
For them to then start working on their own houses afterwards so they can keep them clear and tidy. And I give them the tools to go and do that. Goals and aspirations. I've probably got a couple more books in me, I think. I'd like to maybe look at how we can use this work to heal animals and bring a lot more benefit to the animal kingdom, which in turn will help the planet. For people maybe to start respecting not just the planet more, but also the ground that their home is built on. So do healing on the ground themselves. And of course, if that then sinks into the water, the water, as we know, travels for miles and miles and miles. It travels into bigger rivers, oceans, and then start traveling around the world. So I guess really hopes and aspirations. I think I've probably kind of met everything that I really need to do.
Mm-hmm.
For me now, it's just kind of really solidifying and stabilizing everything that I do to hopefully bring it out to a bigger audience.
Do you have a personal habit or daily routine to that helps you to be successful?
To help me, I do a short, if you like, meditation. I always tend to do a psychic protection on myself in the morning, just to be able to, because, you know, I'm dealing with some very, very difficult people sometimes, some very dark people, some very troubled people at times. And, you know, I can't afford to take their troubles on board. So by doing a general sort of clearing and protecting myself each morning is very, very important. I if like I'm like my spiritual log on in the morning to actually work with the powers that be, calling my spirit guides, my healing guides and my protection guides, and various other people that I work with to help the healing really sort of take place. So that's kind of really my first thing is protection, and then logging into my sort of spiritual world. Mm. And at the end of the evening, just make sure that I close down, that I ask that my energies return to normal living levels, so that, yeah, I can perhaps enjoy a beer or a glass of wine without having to be aware or having to keep my energies up to that higher vibrating level.
Yeah, I made a note, you just added a new workspace. So you have the physical workplace,
yep,
the digital workplace, but you also have a spiritual workplace. That's great. Yeah, you log in the morning.
Absolutely.
To the mainframe.
Yep. And what I do, if my wife comes in, you know, she comes in to have a bit of toast or something in the morning, I always make sure that after she's gone, that her energy patterns are cleared from the room. So it's purely my energies in here and my energies only, because, you know, we're husband and wife, we live together, but her vibrational patterns aren't right for my vibrational patterns when I'm working.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. The only person that gets dispensation is my Springer Spaniel normally, who's in here.
Yeah.
And she just won't stay out because she knows the healing work's going on and she wants to get a bit of it.
Mm-hmm. When listeners got interested in the work you do, what could you advise them how to start to have some quick wins, some quick results to get them going? Because then you have feedback.
Yeah, I think for a lot of people, what I tend to, psychic protection is one of the most important, because if we can protect ourselves from other people's emotions, then I think, you know, we are living ourselves rather than being influenced by other people.
Mm.
Then we can still take on board what people are saying, but they're not influencing us in a detrimental way.
Mm.
There's a lovely way of being able to, if you're ever worried about the house, it's something that I call an ultra fine mesh net of light and love. It's a bit like a trawler's net. You know, you get pulled behind a boat, but it's made up of millions and millions of very small spiritual holes. And you can drag that through your home and just ask that anything detrimental or inappropriate to you and the family is being picked up.
Hmm.
And as it moves through, it's then taken straight up to the light and disposed of appropriately. And that's a very nice way of being able to just do a bit of a spiritual wash and brush up of the house to keep it. If you like, a bit of spiritual hygiene is so important. So that's what I would do if I'm walking into one of our local pubs, for instance. I would always pull that through the pub just to make sure when I walk in, I'm not going to be hit by anything detrimental.
Mm-hmm.
Because often you find spirits in pubs. I mean, not the spirits you drink, but you'd often find that if spirits have spent most of their time in the pub over the years, when they pass over, often they'll go and meet their friends back in the pubs.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, you know, when you're doing this form of spiritual work, the healing work, your light starts to shine a bit brighter. So, of course, they can be attracted to you. And the last thing I want to do is have some drunken lout in my front room when I'm trying to sleep. Mm-hmm. So I always tend to do a sort of a general sort of clearing before I get in there. And when I leave, just to actually put the energy patterns back to whatever's appropriate for the people there at the time.
Well, Adrian, that was a wonderful interview. Thank you very much for sharing your wisdom, your knowledge. And I think for many viewers, it will give some food for thought. Good. And as you said, if a commercial real estate agent can make the stretch, anyone can make a stretch. And what I like also very much about your book, I will attest to that, that is very down to earth, very practical, no woo-hoo stuff. Just explaining what it is, and try it and see if it works, I would say. Yeah.
That's what I say to people. Yeah. And obviously we started off, we talked about universities just very briefly.
Yeah.
You know, there's obviously a lot of mental stress there, you know, with exams and, you know, thesis and everything else that to me, it's quite important. Again, you have your own workspace so that if you're walking into a lecture hall, just put a bubble of white light around yourself. That will help, you know, you be able to concentrate on what's going on rather than being influenced or, I hate to use the word attacked, but, you know, being influenced by other people's energy patterns.
Yeah.
And the same with your room. You know, you don't know who's actually slept in that bed before you got there for your year at in digs, for instance. It's just clear the bed patterns, clear the room. You know, use the ultrafine mesh net of light and love. You can clear all sorts of places with it, and just leaving it in peace, balance, and harmony for people. So it's got a massive application for wherever you are.
Yeah, and also very usable that you can have an influence on those things instead of, okay, I want to get that antenna out of the campus or I want to change the dimension of this room. You cannot influence that.
And if we're looking just briefly before we finish, if you're looking at your house, and let's say you've had the house extended, it's always quite important to actually ask for the removal of the old walls that have been taken down, because often subconscious, there's still an energetic pattern of the wall still there.
Okay.
So what I would then tend to do, I'm working on a house at the moment in the Cotswolds. And what I then do is just remove all those old energy patterns and actually have, you know, the footprint is now as the house stands rather than what it was in the past.
Mm-hmm.
So it all becomes usable space. It all becomes free, the energy becomes free to actually move around the house.
Thank you again.
A pleasure.
Great interview.
Okay, thank you.